So I imagine if you're like me, you've driven up to an intersection or a stoplight and you've seen the person there with some version of the sign, need help, will work for food, I'm hungry, have mercy, God bless. And if you're like me, you may have thought to yourself, wonder what they did wrong to end up there. That's the question, in essence, that the disciples asked of Jesus in the story today. They saw a man who was suffering from blindness all of his life, so likely he was begging. And they turned to Jesus and asked the question out loud. What did he do wrong to end up like that? Or maybe it's his parents' sin. What I want to look at today with you, we generally understand that something like blindness is genetic. It's not related to human sin or choice, though I suppose, you know, while pregnant, the mother was on certain kind of drugs, that could be a consequence. But in general, we realize that things like blindness or deafness are not connected to our spiritual state. But it's harder for us to make that distinction if we see someone at the intersection. We rush to judgment. At least I do, I won't speak for you, I often will issue some kind of internal judgment on the situation. And I want to look today with you at the story in John and the story in Job to see that God sees people, Jesus saw people with different eyes, with a different lens, and asked a whole different question altogether than what did they do wrong or what is the state of their soul or their worth. So I want to look first at John 9 and ask the question, whose fault is it? Now, I will be clear, it is human sin, human choices can cause suffering, right? If you drive too fast and you get in an accident, there is a correlation there between a choice you made and the consequence of it. But that doesn't mean that every sin causes suffering, nor does every good choice produce blessing or abundance. Jesus says, a few things he says and a few things he doesn't say. Jesus says, no, it wasn't the man's sin or his parents' sin that caused blindness. Now, he didn't say that the man was sinless or the parents were sinless. Scripture reminds us more than once, we've all sinned. It's a level playing field. The Apostle Paul goes to great lengths to say that over and over and over again in books like Romans. It's a level playing field. You may grade yourself as a little more or a little less sinful than the person down the row from you. But from God's perspective, we've all sinned. We've all fallen completely short of the glory of God. But Jesus turns in a whole different direction. And in my words, his response about it was neither him nor his parents, but for the works of God, it amounts to these two statements. He in essence, says with his no, it wasn't his sin, he says to the disciples, don't look first for depravity, for worth, for sinfulness. Don't assume that a person's condition that you see them in is a result of their spiritual state. So there's first a no. He says, don't look for depravity. And then what he says positively is, do look for dignity. This blind man that you've made assumptions about actually is to be a vessel for the glory of God. And he can do that because God has created us, male and female, in his image as bearers of the glory of God. I mean, think about that. I mean, think about the difference from what the disciples saw, a person in need, limited in some way. They tied it to sin and human depravity, and Jesus saw a vessel for the glory of God. He lifted up human dignity. So he said to them, wrong question. Rather, it's so that the works of God may be displayed. We see a mess. I use this picture because God sees in us, every one of us, a canvas upon which to paint a masterpiece. If I press that analogy a little bit further, it has been my observation when I've been around real artists of any kind, they see materials in a different way. I can't draw a thing. I mean, I'm bad at stick people, right? But if I were going to paint a picture and I saw a kind of a scrap piece of paper, I'd throw it away. I want the brand new from the store, you know, the bright, shiny canvas upon which I'm going to make my broken stick people. But a real artist, if you've ever been around them, they will collect scraps and bits because they see so much more possibility behind it than we see. It's the same kind of effect. I don't know if you've seen these videos or seen it as real life, in real life, that a true musician might go play a beat up, banged up piano in the basement of some store, and you marvel at their ability to pull music out of this thing. We confuse the canvas and their instrument with the one playing. So Jesus, in effect, sees this man and sees the potential for what God can and is going to do in his life. Well, that reminds me, I want to jump over to the story in the book of Job for a moment. And I've titled this section, "With Friends Like That, the Misguided Counsel of Eliphaz." This is one of those passages that if you read it out of context, you get the exact opposite message of what's supposed to be conveyed. You have to read Job really kind of all at once. Because the big story is, Job is the closest you can find to a good man. Right? If there is someone who is without sin, who is good, most of the time it's going to be Job. And Job is allowed to suffer. And most of the book of Job are his friends coming by to offer interpretations of what's going on. So Eliphaz sees him and says, and I love the translation, "Can I just tell you something? You've done that with me before. Can I just share something with you, Job?" And then he basically says, "You have every reason to hope this suffering is going to be over with soon, because everybody knows, Job, you're a good man. But if it's not, you've got to ask yourself, Job, what did you do wrong? What did you do to cause these calamities?" And it's the series of calamities that happened to Job. We find out at the end of Job that was the wrong advice. It's really the same thing that Jesus said to his disciples. Sometimes a bad choice can lead to bad consequences, but it is not right to link someone's goodness or lack of goodness with their worth or their situation. Sometimes, as the scripture says, the rain falls on the just and on the unjust. So Eliphaz gives this advice, which I would kind of collapse into this. Job, hope in your own goodness. Or what did you do wrong? Either one is really misplaced hope, right? That your goodness or my goodness will somehow assure us of a worry-free or a trouble-free or a suffering-free life. That's just not how it works. And I think if Jesus were there, he would say something very similar to Eliphaz that he said to the disciples, which is, you're asking the wrong question. When you see Job look at a human being made in the image of God, made for the purpose of glorifying God, that whatever happens in his life, he is a vessel made for the purpose of worship, to show the glory of God. And when you get to the end of Job, which is what we heard is our call to worship, it is all about the glory of God. And Job recognizes and realizes that that's the sum purpose of his life. Whatever he may have suffered, whatever he may have enjoyed, it really is all for the purpose of bearing the glory of God. So I want to go back to John 9. Jesus takes the conversation, as I said, in a different direction than what did he do wrong. He says of this man, he exists to that God might work in him, and so that you, my friends, the disciples, you, Good Shepherd, Robert, congregation, you might work the works of God. Right? So participate, share in God's work. God's work is this masterpiece, this painting to that human beings, like the man born blind, would be a canvas upon which God would do whatever God's going to do, and God would be honored in that. Our role, Jesus says to us and the disciples, is don't write that off as useless, worthless. Can anything be done with him, whether it's the man born blind or the person on the street corner or the person down the road from you or the way you see yourself? We are created to bear the glory of God. So he says to the rest of us, join in that. Be a part of what God is doing, right? See with God's eyes. So I want to finally ask the question, whose job is it? God's work, says Scripture, among other things, is to show who he is through the lives of human beings. He also shows that through creation. He also reveals that through his word, through Jesus, through the Spirit. But when God created human beings, Scripture says it was in his image to bear the glory of God, to show, we say this at the communion table, to show forth his glory until Christ comes back. Our work is to share in that, be a part of it, to see each other with the dignity with which God made us. Now, if you question that, think about the folks that God uses. Think through the story of Scripture, right? Think about a prodigal son or a foreign, scandalous woman like the Samaritan woman at the well, or a criminal like Moses. He was run out of Egypt for a capital offense and spent most of his life on the run. Or a headstrong disciple like Peter, eager to do the right thing, but always blundering into the wrong thing. Or a man beaten on the side of the road, like in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Time and time again, God sees what we might call scraps. God paints a masterpiece. Now, if you've ever seen a work of art, I don't think you ever, any of us, say, what a beautiful piece of canvas that artwork was drawn on or painted on, right? The point is not the canvas, so it's not to say what a great leader Moses was or what a great person this is for their glory. It's always to bear the glory of God. That's how God sees us and invites us into what he's doing. So I want to suggest there were two miracles that day when Jesus and the disciples saw the blind man. One was that he healed the man's physical sight, gave him sight so he could see. The other was he gave, or at least invited, spiritual sight of the disciples. He gave them an invitation that their eyes would be opened so that they would see another person, not through a lens of depravity, but through a lens of dignity. And if you think miracles are a thing for long ago, that's the greater miracle, and it's the one that's still being offered today. God says, I invite you to see the people around you, whether it's the homeless person on the corner or the person with a whole lot less education than you, or the person sitting across the dinner table from you, or on your row at church, or the person you see in the mirror. See them with God's lens of dignity as men and women made in the image of God, made for worship, to bear the glory of God in the world, that people would see what God is doing and believe and trust and follow God. It is a radical invitation. It's kind of in the heart of this story that sounds like, oh, there's another miracle. Jesus gave sight to the blind. Move on to the next story. But what's really there is an invitation to you and me, to the disciples, of will you see? Will you see the world and each other the way God sees them? That's one of the main reasons God made the church, to interact with the world and participate in the work that God is doing. May God give us eyes to see.